What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. I'm your host, Adam Mattis from DNVR, where you can subscribe for $5 a month and get access to all of our premium content across all Denver sports beats. Lots of cool stuff coming up and some big announcements coming on. You're gonna want to get in now. So get in now, get in early before the big wave coming, which I think is coming here very, very soon. I am joined today by the OG Big Stiff, the founder of Denver Stiffs, my good friend Andy Feinstein. What's happening?
Mr. Mares, good to see you, my friend. It is, I'm not sure what Big Stiff Summit number this is, but whatever it is, it's never quite enough. I feel like we should do this more often.
Number five, number six, sure. Number seven, I don't know, but they've all been great. They've
can
all been great.
Can we do like a Super Bowl and have Roman numerals?
We do,
Are we up to VII now?
Yep, that's where we are. Yeah. That's a good one.
And maybe we can have a couple seconds on Super Bowl talk.
Are you a Super Bowl guy?
I'm a Super Bowl guy.
Are you?
So I am a Super Bowl guy. In fact, my wife and I have an overseas wedding with some very good friends of ours on 2-2-20, which is unfortunate because I'm going to miss watching the Super Bowl for the first time in my entire life.
Wow.
Even when I went to college in Denmark, I remember watching the Super Bowl live in the middle of the night. That was when the...
Was there a crowd?
Oh, yeah. We were at a local bar in Copenhagen. It was a big crowd. That's when the... Packers beat the Patriots the year before the Broncos went to the Super Bowl and beat the Packers. And I remember, I'm a big Super Bowl guy. I got to go to Super Bowl 48 and 50. Obviously, very different experiences, start to finish. I will tell you that Super Bowl 50, from a sporting experience standpoint, was the greatest live sporting experience of my life. Better than you know, the only other one I can relate it to would be like the Nuggets beating the Sonics in Game 4. I wasn't there for Game 5 in Seattle, but the Nuggets beating the Sonics in Game 4 on our home floor in 1994 was the only other one I could equate it to. It's just to watch your home team that you've rooted for your entire life. Dream big, Nuggets fans. Yeah. That's where we're going here. To watch the team that you've rooted for your entire life. And, you know, I was in college when the Broncos won their first two Super Bowls. And I was in New York and for Super Bowl 48 when they just got their asses kicked.
Yeah, that was
and
miserable.
To be there 2 years later and be part of that euphoric victory, I just can't articulate it. It's just one of those incredible experiences. And I hope that Nuggets fans will get to experience something on that level at some point.
I can't even imagine how that would feel. Because I love the Broncos. And the three Super Bowls have all been special. They've all meant something. They're things I'll always remember, but if it's not comparable to me personally about if the Nuggets won a championship, it would be something so gratifying.
Well, I'm in the same boat as you, and we don't need to relitigate material.
No, we do.
Remember I told you my 4-team theory? The Broncos are my firstborn. The Nuggets are the second child. The Rockies are the baby, and the Avalanche are the kid we adopted, remember? And unfortunately, the Nuggets as our second child, and the Rapids are like our redheaded stepchild. But the, you know, the Nuggets as our second child have always struggled. The Broncos have always been the star of the family.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm a Nuggets fan first and foremost. The Nuggets come first. If I had to choose between a Nuggets playoff game and a Bronco playoff game, I'd go to a Nuggets playoff game. But I can't even imagine. To me, well, let's talk about this.
To me,
the Nuggets winning is almost unfathomable, even though they're good right now. However, the Raptors, the Cavaliers, and the Golden State Warriors, if you had told me 7-8 years ago that in 7 or 8 years into the future, the Golden State Warriors, who've been to one playoff series in 20 years, the Toronto Raptors, who have been nothing but futile for 20-something years, and the Cleveland Cavaliers, we're going to have rings, it means that the Nuggets can actually win. It means that the Nuggets can win. And I think that Nuggets fans and hopefully the Nuggets organization realize that they can win.
Yeah.
They can win it all.
I share your belief that the Nuggets will never win a championship, or at least that if you were gun to your head, you had to say yes or no, you would probably say no.
I still don't think they will ever actually do it. Actually, but they could.
Right. But they could. that could is bigger than ever before. I agree with you.
Yeah.
And for reasons that you mentioned, I do think teams have gotten a little bit smarter about this. I mean, there was this thing, you know, back in the 80s or 90s, the way you would build a team was so much more from the hip, right? Just this idea of like, oh, bring in these guys, whatever. I do think that you can be smart in today's NBA as the Raptors were, and as I believe the Denver Nuggets are for the most part. They've done some very good things to put some talent, to give themselves a chance, to be in position. So I believe that part of it, but then also just, I like this roster.
Well, real quick, before we get into how much you like this roster, I actually think the Nuggets I guess I'm using the word actually. I believe that this Nuggets roster, or at least the construct of this team, is similar to what they did in Toronto.
Oh, no doubt about it.
What Masai Ujiri did.
Yeah.
He amassed assets. He had two All-Stars, which we effectively have one and a half All-Stars, but he had two All-Stars and a series of kind of incoming young players, deep bench. He had lots of assets with which to tinker with that team. And they won 50 games. They went up to 60 games one year. They won between 50 and 60, you know, got to the first round, got to the second round, got to the conference finals, which I think the Nuggets could do this year, had a little bit of a step back, but they were in a position to strike.
Yeah.
And so the Kawhi Leonard situation, albeit somewhat of an anomaly, when that opportunity came up, they were able to strike. And it's not
Is it an anomaly?
Well, my point is that just like Anthony Davis' situation last year, or maybe Porzingis' situation two years ago, I'm not quite sure those are apples to apples, but in any given, let's say, two-year period, I think you have an opportunity to take a guy and bring him in for a year.
Right.
And, you know, as you know, I'm still friends with Masai Ujiri. I have lots of friends in Toronto, and I've asked lots of Raptors fans, are you okay with this kind of Faustian bargain of, you know, you lost DeMar DeRozan, you know, your star player who had maybe three or four years on his contract for a superstar in Kawhi with 1 year on his contract, but you got a ring. And to a person, they will tell you, I take that deal all day long.
Right.
And look at the character of the Raptors this year.
Right.
I almost think they look better.
Yeah. It's like championship pedigree is a real thing.
You got it. So I think that the Nuggets are in a position to strike. And the reason I winced a little bit, which of course your listeners can't see, when you said how much you love this roster, is to make that move. It does come with parting with guys that we love. And that's going to be Tim Connelly's challenge. And I know he's sleeping with that challenge every night because – that's going to be his challenge.
He's a loyal guy, too.
He is.
But not that he wouldn't make the deal that needs to be done, but there's some guys that, like Daryl Morey, just looks at these people as like poker chips, right? I mean, he's willing to move people around. I think Tim Connelly's not that way. He knows their families.
And he's not that way, and he's not. And I know he knows their families, but it's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in the business of winning. And sometimes with winning, I'm not quite sure how we equate to it in my own business with real estate and hospitality, but sometimes you got to make a change. I mean, I think about bold changes in NBA history. Certainly what Masai Ujiri did by moving DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, who had basically missed an entire season, was one of the boldest moves in NBA history.
Oh, no doubt about it.
But I'll give you another one that people don't think about a lot. 2003 Detroit Pistons, Rick Carlisle, he's a great coach. They won 50-something games. I think they got to the conference finals, and Joe Dumars fired him and brought in Larry Brown, who's a maniac.
Yeah.
And they went to back-to-back NBA finals and won a ring, and they took down Kobe and Shaq. So sometimes you got to make a really bold move. And by the way, I think one of Masai's underrated moves, it wasn't just the Kawhi Leonard thing. That gets all the attention. It was parting with Jonas Valanciunas. A young center with a long contract and a lot of potential
helped
for an old center in Marc
Gasol. One of the guys that helped build that roster.
And the coaching change.
Yeah.
You know, parting with Dwayne Casey.
A very loved coach.
So, yeah, and who he was very loyal to.
Right.
Like Tim is loyal to Michael Malone. So sometimes you got to make a really bold move. And, you know, John Elway did it.
Right.
I mean, John Fox gave us some pretty good seasons, got us to a Super Bowl. I thought he should have canned John Fox after the Super Bowl loss.
Right. Immediately, the third quarter.
Right, he waited a year, but you know, bringing in Gary Kubiak got us a ring. So you got to remember.
Well, I want to say
loyalty. Yes, we want to be loyal to our key people in life and in love and in business. But in business, we're in the business in sports in particular. You're in the business of winning.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got to make a tough move to win.
When I say I like this roster, I don't think this is the group that wins a championship for Denver. Again, if they were to win a championship, I don't think it's it. But I just think that you have pieces in place to get there, like Toronto did. I think Denver has Toronto's 60-win roster.
That's what I'm
saying. Not the one that won it. They've got in there that's like, okay, you're in the stratosphere. Now you have that one last move, that last little push that's going to get you over, and who knows what it is. And to your point about Kawhi and about the Raptors, how they had all these years, they could have gone all in 4 years ago and made a move, and it might not have worked because it wasn't the right one. They had the ability to give it 2, 3, 4 years and say, boom, that's it. That's our guy. And I think a lot of people look at Denver now and they're thinking, oh, Bradley Beal, go for him. That's just the guy available. It's not the right guy. He's just the guy. Maybe next year it's another play. Maybe it's Giannis in a couple years. Maybe there is a guy and it's not for 2, 3, 4 years. But when you have great organizational stability, you can afford to pick your moment and sort of be a little bit more choosy. And I think Denver has set themselves up with enough young talent to be able to do that.
And remember something else, and I've learned this by being fortunate enough to be close to not just Masai, but Tim Connolly, to George Karl when he was here, to Karl Scheer. May he rest in peace. He's passed since we last did a podcast, right. And we should maybe talk about him a little bit today. But what I've learned from those guys is, so, and you know this better than I do because you're in that locker room and you're getting to know the organization. So much goes on behind the scenes that we just don't know about. Oh, and no, we, yeah. Meaning more me than you. You know, just sure. The average fan. I'm really an average fan now. You know, I go to 15, 20 games. I watch them on TV when I can. We got to talk about that whole fiasco. Chemistry, and I see it in my own organization here at Exto. Chemistry is critically important.
Oh, yeah.
And so, for example, Marc Gasol, he may not have the best stats in the world, but from a chemistry standpoint, he was invaluable to the Raptors winning that championship, you know? And we don't know what guys are having schisms behind closed doors. We don't know what coaches and guys are having schisms behind closed doors. And if the chemistry is not right within the roster, and this is where the whole Denver Stiffs fire George Karl thing came from in the first place, you can turn a 60-win team into a 50-win team really fast,
yeah.
You know? And vice versa, you can turn a 20-win team into a 40-win team real fast. I think that the Nuggets are in a situation where, you know, yeah, we're going to win 50 to 60 games. I'm not sure there's a lot more regular season wins to be had here.
Yeah, yeah.
The question is what's the chemistry ingredient? Who's the guy that is going to shake up the roster a little bit, but elevate them to a championship level? And unfortunately, this is where me being disconnected from what you do every day pains me a little bit as I'm talking to you. I haven't even looked at the trade machine. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hearing some scuttlebutt about Bradley Beal, Jrue Holiday, whatever. Like you say, the flavor of the month, who the Nuggets need to get. This may not be the season. Maybe this is a season where we say, guys, let's win 55, 56 games again. Let's get to the conference finals. That's a big step. We didn't get there last year. You got two big LA teams in your way. You got a tough Utah team in your way. You know, if the Nuggets can get to the conference finals this year with this roster, then maybe you do a reassessment for next season.
What about Michael Porter? You talk about having the guy. So Michael Porter Jr. hasn't played a ton of minutes, but over the last month, I feel like we've seen, you know, more
the second coming of Christ.
Well, yes. Well, we've just seen
I'm Jewish. I can say that.
Well, we've just seen like what he is. What have your impressions been watching him over this stretch?
Gosh. So I have. God, my mind goes to two places when I think of Michael Porter Jr. You're going to cringe probably twice.
Great.
So one is Danilo Gallinari is where my mind goes.
No, okay.
I feel like he's like a smoother, more athletic version of Gallo, and yet he still has that clunkiness of Gallo. Just like watching him walk up the floor and jump, I'm like, oh gosh, that's an injury waiting to happen, okay?
No.
And I say that with all due respect because I think Danilo Gallinari's had a hell of a career. The other place my brain goes is LaPhonso Ellis. You know, it's the first time I've been excited about a Nuggets kind of rookie-ish big man since Fonz was here. And Fonz, Jeff Morton, if you're listening, he will appreciate this. Fonz was my all-time favorite player. You know, just injecting enthusiasm and energy off the bench. You know, LaPhonso and other than Michael Porter Jr. missing a year, you know, they both came from Midwest colleges. They both came from good families. And they really kind of handled that 3-4 spot in a dynamic way that the Nuggets hadn't previously seen. So, and then just my anecdotal story, I went to the Clippers game the other night, and the young gentleman who always sits in front of me had a Michael Porter Jr. jersey on. And as I looked to the left, his uncle had a Michael Porter Jr. jersey on. And I looked to my right, and I'm seeing other little kids with Michael Porter Jr. jerseys on. So I think that from the fun factor, I'm excited. You know, every time he shoots, I can't believe that ball goes in. I can't believe it. I mean, he basically does
that's interesting,
a leaning backwards rainbow three.
He's a tough shot maker.
That's not how you're supposed to shoot a basketball. So, but the ball goes in. I cringe almost every time he shoots, and the ball goes in. So I'm excited. I think that you know, he could be the X factor. I mean, did the Nuggets pluck an all-star with the 14th pick in the draft? I mean, and is he the X factor? Because here was what I think our problem was the last couple of seasons. Who scores in the fourth quarter? Jamal Murray will shoot it, but I'm not sure it'll go in. Jokic is like a reticent end of game.
You know, Jokic runner. Has more game winners than any player over the last year and a half.
I knew you were going to say that.
And he's like the fourth highest field goal percentage in the club.
Maybe just because he looks so lumbering.
He does. Well, I mean, he's another one that just looks every time he shoots it, you're kind of like,
I don't know. You tell me. You're the expert. You follow him closer than me. What's your take on Michael Porter? I've actually been dying to hear your take, and now we get to hear it. So
I'm usually slow. I don't consider myself necessarily like a Nuggets optimist. I'm a Jokic optimist. Like he's a guy that I've always been just so high on. But you know, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, I've long said these are good players. They're Toronto Raptors players. You know, they're like, okay, they're not going to get you over the hump. You need that guy or whatever, and that's going to be Jokic, but maybe another one. I think Michael Porter Jr. is that guy. And I would almost never say this about a guy that has played 500 minutes in the NBA. You have to really stand out to me. He's at like 440 or something.
Yep.
I'm sold. I think if he is healthy, he is the second best, maybe first best player on this Nuggets team.
Better than Jokic.
I'm not projecting that as what's going to happen, but it is within the realm of possibility. It's not within the realm of possibility for Jamal Murray. Like, his best possible outcome for him is not better than Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
With Michael Porter Jr., the best possible outcome with him, he's that good. He's that talented of a player, and he is talented in ways that I think fit so nicely with Jokic. He's a great rebounder, a great cutter, great shooter. I've been pleasantly surprised with how he's handled this season. Because let's be honest, Michael Malone's been the taskmaster. He's kept him on the bench. He's pulled him for little...
He's pulling a Doug Moe on Chris Jackson circa 1990.
There you go.
The Nuggets basically fired Doug Moe because he said, I ain't playing this rookie. Yeah.
Well, yeah, Michael Malone maybe. I mean, he gets the grace this year and it's working out so far. But there is something to that. Next year, if there's the same stuff going on, or later down the year if MPJ keeps this up, I do think there's going to be some friction. But I just think Michael Porter is a cornerstone piece. And the fact that Denver has Jokic as a cornerstone piece, and now you add another piece, you say, oh, that could be a cornerstone piece.
If only they had a real point guard.
that'll be certainly an interesting story for, I think, another day. The Denver almost certainly running it. But I put this out on Twitter this morning. I said, I've always said the Nuggets aren't going to win a championship, but that they could do it. Has always been like a 1% could. And I'm just up. I don't want to put a number on it, but I'm up on it to saying, like, I see it. I see the possibility.
Well, and I would tell you, I'm a bit of a gunslinger, as you know, in business and in sports. And I launched Denver Stiffs without really thinking about what the consequences of doing that would be. And I kind of tend to shoot and aim later. And I think that in the case of Michael Porter Jr., if I was Michael Malone, I'd play him.
Yeah.
Like, so what? So you win 54 games instead of 56 games? Right. I mean, if you have any – I'm agreeing with you. Like, if you have any chance to beat either of these L.A. teams, which I think is going to be a formidable obstacle. In fact, the Clippers scare me more than the Lakers do, by the way.
Yeah.
If you have any chance to beat them, you're going to have a guy that can go for 20 and a half. And I just don't know if they have that guy, you know. And I think
he already went for 17 and a half,
sure,
on like 8 minutes or something. Sure. So
I think that he is that X factor. Yeah. And look, I think let's give Tim Connelly a lot of credit. I think he deserves a lot of credit. I know he likes to beat himself up for not taking Donovan Mitchell, let's give Tim Connelly a lot of credit. I mean, he has built a deep roster, a talented roster. I think they've really fixed the culture in that locker room. That locker room was rotten under Brian Shaw and the collection of players they had. Absolutely rotten. And he's done a great job of bringing in the right kind of guys. I'm glad Nurkic isn't here anymore.
Yeah.
I'm certainly glad Ty Lawson's not here anymore. I'm thrilled that Kenneth Faried's not here anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a likable group.
It's a likable group. You know, I think you just see the way the young guys are rooting, other than maybe Beasley and Torrey Craig, but.
Which is one reason maybe he won't be here, because you're right. Torrey Craig on the sideline still runs out first in the huddles and high fives everybody. Like, he's still there.
Yeah, I'm on the wrong bench. I sit behind the visitors bench at
there
the games. So I don't pay attention much with what's going on the Nuggets bench. And since I can't watch the games on TV, I have no idea. I'm just kidding.
But let me ask you
I do have means to watch
them. We're going to go to that here in just a second, but let me ask you this, though, because you know marketing. You know. The Jokic, I love him. He's great. He's just not a marketable player.
No.
And Jamal Murray, I don't know that he's good enough to be a marketable player. And there's so many point guards. I mean, I don't know that he's going to be better than a Damian Lillard or more famous than a Damian Lillard. Michael Porter Jr., to me, if he pans out with what we have seen of him, the style of player he projects to do, he's a star. He's a Kevin Durant type star. 3-point shooter, dunker, super athletic. highlight reel player. To me, he is the guy that makes the Nuggets. The Nuggets have gained popularity over the last two, three years. I mean, the attendance is up, all that. I think it goes back to the Melo days with Michael Porter Jr. just in terms of popularity.
And hopefully he's a better kid than Melo was here.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
I will never forget Carmelo Anthony standing up his own charity event here in Denver, and that's Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
And I know he's had his humble pie, and everyone's rooting for Carmelo, and it's a cute, cuddly story this year. Yeah, but yeah. But I think that hey, look, I'm agreeing with you. I think he's a rich – I should have mentioned – I think he's a rich man's Danilo Gallinari.
Okay.
Physically, they look similar, but he has an extra tier above Gallo in the Gallo's athleticism.
Like career high is like 34.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly low.
Although I will say, I love what the Thunder are doing.
Oh, I know.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. It's in the Nuggets mold, really. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Well, I love it and don't love it. I think Sam Presti's the most overrated
general
manager in the history of the NBA.
Oh, wow.
Okay? He drafted three generational players.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
He turned six NBA championships into zero. Okay? That's the bottom line. He turned six NBA championships into zero. However, that said, I like what he did this summer. If he was going to lose Paul George anyway, and he was going to lose Russell anyway, I never thought that the Thunder should tank, and I think the Thunder are dangerous. I think with Chris Paul and Gallo and Steven Adams, you know, I think that that's a formidable team in the playoffs. I wouldn't sleep on them.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about David Stern. I think his legacy is going to be interesting. And then we're also just going to talk about the state of the NBA and changing media and everything else that's going on.
Awesome. Can't wait.
We'll be right back.
Love David Stern.
Back here with Andy Feinstein. Yeah, so I want to ask you about it. It was interesting when you brought up Tim Connelly, you kind of referenced he has a responsibility to win and might have to hurt some feelings or kill his children metaphorically to get there. To me, that's David Stern's legacy. He had a responsibility to the job, and he pissed a lot of people off along the way, but it seemed like he was perfectly fine with that because he felt a conviction for what he was trying to do. To me, that'll be David Stern's legacy. He wasn't the most fun, the most likable, approachable to a fan, but he got the league from where it was to where it needed to be through hell or high water.
So when I was growing up, you and I are tall guys. That's why this is the Big Stiff Summit. I'm almost 6'6". You're almost 6'6",
yeah,
right?
No.
I knew at an early age that I was never going to play in the NBA. Even though I practiced playing basketball, I was a big white stiff, you know, and throw Jewish in there and I was a quadruple stiff or whatever the phrase is. You know, I just knew that playing basketball on a competitive level was never going to be something that was in my future. But that doesn't mean you can't be connected to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was growing up, my idol was David Stern. If you had asked me as a 12-year-old, even though I had posters in my room of Alex English and Dominique Wilkins and
you didn't have a David
Isaiah
Stern
Thomas,
poster.
They didn't have David Stern. I wanted to be David Stern.
Yeah.
That was my idol. And if you look back to like old papers I wrote when I was 12 years old, and they're like, well, who do you admire? Who do you want to be when you grow up? David Stern. And I thought that what he did obviously, the business side kind of speaks for itself, how he elevated the game and the sport. But there's too many stories to tell. But David Stern had a compassion for his people and for his players. And, yeah, they say he was ruthless. Sometimes you got to be ruthless to be successful.
That's what I mean.
But there's a reason why his top people worked for him for a really long time.
Right.
You know, and whether that's Rick Welts or Adam Silver or Val Ackerman or Stu Jackson or whoever was around him, you know. Russ Granick, you know, this core group of folks that helped elevate the league for all of our benefit, frankly. You don't engender loyalty by being an asshole all the time. You just don't. And so I think that he had the right mix of toughness but compassion. And he did a lot of things under the radar charitably for his people and his players that we just don't know about. I know about them. And I can't talk about them. But he was unbelievable. He was one of the greatest CEOs. Forget sports commissioners. He may have been one of the greatest CEOs of the last 50 years in American business history. And so I love David Stern. That was my idol growing up.
That's so funny that he was your idol. It also isn't surprising. For some reason, it's very fitting.
I was always taught you want to be an owner, not a player.
Right. Yeah.
So, that was good. You want to make money by the unit, not the hour. So that's why, you know, I was always taught that. But no, I think David Stern is it's a true American entrepreneur story. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember what the NBA was like. You know, I always say I became a really big fan when I was about 7 or 8 years old. So you're talking 1982, 1983, 1 or 2 years before Stern becomes commissioner. He became commissioner in 1984. And I was part and parcel to this as a fan to this ascension of this game. Yeah. And gosh, what he did! You know, I love Africa. I've been very fortunate to go to Africa with Masai Ujiri through our Giants of Africa organization for many years now. And I was watching some of this old Stern footage when he passed. He brought a delegation to South Africa in like 1992, 1993. Alex English went on that delegation. And Mutombo went on that delegation. Mandela wasn't president yet. Mm. He had just gotten out of jail. You know, Mandela becomes president of South Africa in 1994.
Right.
And David Stern had the foresight to bring an NBA delegation to South Africa to meet with Nelson Mandela in the early 90s. And don't tell me that the Basketball Africa League and the fact that 10% of all NBA players have an African parent, that doesn't go directly back to 1992.
10%? Is that? Wow.
45 NBA players have an African parent.
Wow.
They're either African or they have an African parent.
Right.
One of their two parents is African.
So that's like Giannis 10%. Qualifies.
Yes. Yeah. He would be in the 100% category. Right, right. So that goes back to David Stern's vision and being willing to go to that place in 1992.
Yeah.
Go to China. Go to Eastern Europe.
Vision is such a big part of leadership. Yes. I mean, especially at something like this as a commissioner of a league and seeing forward. And that's why I want to kind of segue from there to talk about Adam Silver, because I think we are for the first time seeing his big test. I mean, we saw big tests with David Stern over the course of his 30 years. To me, I think Adam Silver is facing his first big test. And that is that, you know, ratings are down, but the everybody's talking about the NBA at an incredible pace. They own the internet. They own YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, every social out, Instagram, they own all of that, but they can't get people to watch the games.
Let's talk about that. First of all, I think Adam Silver passed his first big test, which was the Donald Sterling
situation. You're right. That's great.
And he did a great job of standing by his players. I thought he did a great job kind of standing up for the civil rights and social justice nature of the NBA. And I think he's done a really good job of standing behind his players, especially, you know, those who are a little more politically vocal, especially in these times. I don't want to get into a political debate on this show, but I think Adam Silver's done a really good job of standing up for the social justice component of the NBA. So let's give him credit there for passing that test. On this card, you know, I think the ratings are down for a couple of reasons. First of all, I was surprised the ratings were so good the last few years. You know this. I stopped writing in 2016. Right. You know, and I'm not going to keep talking about the Warriors, how the Warriors ruined my fandom. And I don't know how the ratings can be good when you know who's going to win at the end of the year, no matter what.
Mm.
That's not the case this season.
Right.
I mean, either LA team could win. In theory, the Nuggets could win. Maybe the Jazz could win. Maybe the Rockets could win. I doubt it, but maybe. Then you got on the East side, you got the Bucks. I wouldn't count out the Raptors. And you got the Sixers and the Celtics. So, I mean, for the first time, I think, since Kevin Durant gravy trained on the Warriors, we have more than one or two teams who's going to the finals. It's not going to be Warriors versus LeBron again. You know, we actually have something different going on. So I think that's exciting. My theory that the ratings are down is for a couple of reasons. One is you cannot have your biggest markets be not just terrible teams, but have no marketable players in them.
Okay.
So let's talk about some of the biggest markets, okay? The Knicks, obviously, is number one. Yeah. They're literally not worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your biggest TV market. It's not worth watching. When LeBron's on the East Coast, when he's playing for Cleveland, he's playing the Knicks four times a year.
Oh, yeah.
He's playing the Bulls four times a year.
Yeah.
He's playing the Celtics four times a year.
And he's playing at 7 o'clock on the
you Eastern got it. That's where I'm going. Yeah. So you got it. That's exactly where I'm going with this. So when LeBron went from East to West, that was a ratings decimation for multiple reasons. You know, Miami's a big market, but I can't name more than five players on that team.
Yeah.
And I can't name one that I would pay a ticket to go see. And don't tell me Jimmy Butler, because he doesn't count.
Really?
You know?
Wow. So, he's worth the price
of it. Well, fair enough. But the average NBA, the average sports fan in the world has no clue who's on the Heat starting five. And they're like the second best team in the East right now.
Yeah.
Okay. The Raptors are a collection of great players, but I don't think none of them are household names. The Celtics don't have a single household name. The Celtics have a really good team. They don't have a household name.
Yeah, to basketball fans, yes. You're talking about to just the average person. Does your mom call and ask about Jason Tatum? No.
You're right, exactly. Yeah. So you're missing, even though these Eastern teams are good, they don't have household names. The best player in the whole league is Giannis Antetokounmpo, and he's in Milwaukee.
Right,
not exactly a ratings generator, either him personally or the team. So we have this power shift to the West, where the Lakers are really compelling, the Clippers are really compelling, But they're in the same market, and to your point, they're on at midnight on the East Coast, which I've never understood why the NBA does that.
Is there a problem with the league if you need the league? I mean, I always talk about the Lakers as being too big to fail. I mean, what you're talking about right now is there's this great talent that nobody cares about, in part because it's in Milwaukee.
Average sports fan, not average, NBA fan, average sports fan.
I understand that, yeah. But I'm saying, like, you know, the Chiefs are playing the 49ers, and sure, Mahomes is a big draw. But no matter who's in the Super Bowl, you're watching it because it's an event and because people just like the sport of football and the competition of it and the traditions and everything else. You don't see the NFL going like, man, I really hope that this year it's the Patriots versus the Cowboys. We need that every year.
I'm going to slightly disagree a little bit. I think the NFL was cringing at the prospect of a Titans 49ers Super Bowl. Cringing. And I think when it was Baltimore-San Francisco, that wasn't their finest hour.
Okay.
I just don't think so.
But nonetheless, it's not as dependent.
It's really not apples to oranges. I mean, the NFL is 17 weeks, 16 games, one and done. The Super Bowl is a spectacle,
But my point is bigger picture here, Andy, because if we need the Lakers and Knicks and those teams to be relevant for the league to survive, that's so different than every other sports league where it's like, yeah, we want the Yankees to be in, right? We want the Red Sox or Dodgers or whatever. But you know what? Everybody enjoys rooting for whatever's happening with these other teams.
So let's just talk about that. So the NBA did just fine with LeBron James in Cleveland.
Yeah.
They did just fine.
Yeah.
And they did just fine with the Golden State Warriors. I think San Francisco Bay Area is the 10th or 11th biggest market. They did just fine with that collection of guys because Steph Curry is so compelling. Klay Thompson is so good. The Warriors are fun to watch. Even for an average sports fan, they were really, really fun to watch. Well, there is no Steph Curry this year. There is no Klay Thompson this year. There is no Kevin Durant this year. LeBron is in the West.
Right.
There is no I think it's a confluence of a lot of things. I think the NBA will be fine. But I hate to say this as a Nuggets fan, but I think the Lakers and or the Knicks need to be good. You can't have them both bad. So right now we have the Lakers good, Knicks bad. And I would probably throw the Celtics into that mix. Every sport has their iconic franchises. The NBA's three iconic franchises, maybe four if you want to throw in the Bulls. But they're really the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Celtics. In football, they have multiple iconic franchises. You know, they have the Packers, they have the Cowboys, Steelers, they have the Giants, they have the Steelers, they have multiple. You know, baseball, obviously you got Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, Cubs. You got four kind of megawatt recognizable franchises. I just think the NBA, it's a confluence of events. Bad injuries. And look, Brooklyn's terrible, you know? Not necessarily with their record, but you have no Kevin Durant, and you have a part-time Kyrie Irving, and who the hell likes Kyrie Irving anyway?
Yeah, he's become so unlikable.
So I think the NBA just has a little bit of a – it's got an imbalance, not in terms of what's on the court, but they have an imbalance in terms of star power, and it's weighted to the West, and it's weighted to one city right now.
I just look at the league right now, and I think there's so many – interesting players and stars, and the fact that they're just not considered interesting to the general public to me is it's an interesting failure to leverage what makes the league
interesting. Let's talk about that. Here's something I've never understood. Atlanta. So I went to college in Atlanta. I was a Hawks fan growing up. I loved Dominique Wilkins. He was my favorite player. But you look, you're in my office right now. You can see my Dominique stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay? Oh, yeah.
That's a basketball signed by him. I got my bobblehead doll. Yeah. I got my autograph print. I got my stuffed animal. Yeah. And so I've never understood it. Atlanta's like the seventh biggest city in America. It's like the epicenter of African-American business power and political power. And yet the Hawks have never like generated enthusiasm on a national level. And they got this young kid, Trae Young, who's fabulous. And other than diehard NBA nerds like us, who's talking about Trae Young, you know? Look at all the markets that are down in the East. Atlanta's a big city, down. Washington, down.
Right.
New York, down. Chicago, down. I mean, those are four major, major markets, all down. None of them are going to make the playoffs. That's not good.
I think I agree with you that there's some of this, but to me, it's the league is exciting, and if you can't market it, then your product just isn't good.
Oh, so your point is Adam Silver's, this is his test. They shouldn't have this
circumstance. And in this way, when you have, to your point about football, it's 17 weeks. Everybody makes time on Sunday for it. Yeah. It's an American institution. Basketball, it's all throughout like 6-7 months. But here's the thing. The way you consume anything has just changed so much, and the NBA has really leveraged the conversation part of it, but they haven't leveraged the way you watch it. And I think that nobody has cable packages. Nobody wants them. Everybody watches it through their computer, their phone, through everybody south of 35 is doing it through these alternative ways. And even that's why YouTube, you go on, like LeBron James will score 40 points one night, you go on 12 hours later and it'll have a million views of people will watch the highlights of LeBron James doing it. People want to consume it. It's just their time is so much quicker. Everything goes quicker now, and you can just on demand, okay, I want the good parts of this. But I think that I think a big piece of the future of the NBA will be moving away from some of their cable, for some of the ways that they present their show to the masses, which kind of brings us to Altitude TV.
Well, let's get there real quick. I do have one question for you.
Sure.
Who cares about the TV ratings? Who cares?
Well, yeah, well, the marketers, the marketing partners.
I mean, everyone I know, I hate to say word, that's a bad word. Okay, a lot of guys I know,
sure,
they don't watch. They don't. They're cord cutters.
Of course,
they pay for NBA League Pass as I do, and they watch it on their iPad before bed as I do.
Right.
I watch. I happen to have a DirecTV account here in this office where you're sitting.
Nice.
Because of that, I don't have DirecTV at home. So because I have DirecTV in this office, I have my username and my password for DirecTV Now or whatever the service is, and that's how I get to watch the Nuggets on this iPad that is sitting right here at home.
Yeah.
So I'm not watching the Nuggets on the big screen, but I am watching it on my iPad because I happen to have a DirecTV account. How stupid is that?
It is very
stupid.
And
so I think that Adam Silver has to figure out and by the way, streaming can be tracked a lot more accurately than TV ratings. TV ratings,
because you can get it. You can figure out who's
TV ratings are just a subset of people that they stick a Nielsen box on. Like, what is this, 1984?
Right, yeah,
and we're hoping the Dynasty ratings are okay this week, so it doesn't get canceled next week.
That's funny.
I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Altitude. I think that this is where they screwed up, and I don't know if this has anything to do with Jim Martin's removal as president, but no one looked into the future there.
Right.
Number one. How do you let all three of your contracts expire at the same time?
Right, yeah, of course.
Don't you want to leverage them against each other by having them staggered?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't say that because the NBA's TV contracts are expiring at the same time with ESPN and Turner. But how did they not look into the future and say, our consumer is not watching it on a television tube at home with their cable box stuck in the wall. They're going to watch it on their phone. They're going to watch it on their iPad. And the Nuggets should have done a deal with maybe Amazon or something.
Of course,
And built the first ever local streaming network.
And this is why I wonder...
And by the way, one more thing. And sell your own ads.
Right, right.
Why give Comcast the money?
Exactly.
Screw them.
This is why I wonder if Adam Silver and the NBA, this is their test. I think Altitude TV is sort of... A lot of people have their eyeballs on it, not just in Denver, but people kind of saying like, okay, this is what the cable companies can do to us should they want to. And what is the next version of this? And the cable company, to their credit, is saying nobody's watching your product, which is true. We had a watch party, you know, close to 100 people the other day, and I asked, how many of you guys are watching the game still? Oh, everybody raised their hand. On cable or illegal streams? Everybody was an illegal stream, and I'm talking about people even my age, even slightly older. So I think that the NBA is going to be faced with similar things as the Denver Nuggets locally are, which is, you need the next paradigm. You need to figure out how to monetize your product because clearly everybody wants it. They just don't want it in the way you've always.
What I find really offensive is if I'm an NBA League Pass subscriber, I can't watch a Nuggets game in my market.
Right, because of the cable though.
I know, but that's offensive to me.
And the local
that's
RSNs.
Offensive to me. So absolutely embrace the new paradigm. Everybody else has. Disney just did it. So,
and you're an entrepreneur. Because I hear a lot of people say, there's so many great people at Altitude. I love it. Anytime you criticize or talk about the search situation, it sounds like you're just being negative on them. But, you know, they have said they are not going to be pioneers. We're going to follow the market or whatever. But they're in a position, being the local RSN that doesn't have partnerships, you know, Fox Yes Network or Fox Sports, where it's a bunch of different cities or whatever. They're alone. They're on an island. I think they have to be pioneers. If they want to hold on, if they want to broadcast the Nuggets going forward, you have to look at it and you have to say, we have to invent something. And as an entrepreneur, I know you, look at problems like this and think, what's the next thing and how can I win at this? Not, we're getting screwed by the cable.
I would have been salivating. I would have been buying billboards around town saying, oh, please call Dish.
Please, right, yeah. Please help us
please
out.
Please call Dish. Please. Yeah. I would never have done that. I would have said F you to Dish and F you to Comcast and F you to DirecTV. Mm-hmm. And I had my own streaming system and I would have ran my own ads and made my own money and they can all go stuff it. Yeah. To quote Marv Albert.
And there might not be a ton of money in that right away. It might end up being a loss leader. But you know what? Somebody at some point is going to have this loss leader to get over the hump to figure out what the next paradigm is.
Preaching to each other's choir.
Yeah. Well,
I've always said the cable companies, you know, the distributors, not the networks, the distributors, they're thieves. I mean, they gouged us. They almost had a monopoly on us, if not right. It was a duopoly. Yep. And, you know, they got money two ways. They got money from you paying for your subscription, and they got to keep the ad revenue on the network. When ESPN or Altitude or whoever gets their $4 a head or their $8 a head per subscriber, that's just a pass-through expense.
Right.
The cable companies, you know, they yutzy all the way up the line there. It's a Yiddish term. So anyway.
I love it. I think it's interesting, though. The ratings conversation, the Altitude conversation, all of this stuff to me is just a natural progression of things we saw coming 5 years ago.
Well, like I said, I'm a cord cutter. I'm a YouTube TV subscriber. I love it. I can watch on my big screen at home, either of my two screens at home, my iPad, my phone, anywhere in the United States. I can pick up where I left off. I can record shows. It records things automatically for me because it knows what I like.
Yeah.
I'm a total cord cutter. I'm all in. It's just that my only challenge, unfortunately, has been the Nuggets game. So I maintain a DirecTV account so I can continue watching Nuggets games.
And not to toot my own horn or our own horn here, but like this is sort of the spirit of DNVR, which might go belly up. You never know. I mean, startups, you never know how they're going to sure. do. But the whole vision is that something is going to be the next media platform, next digital media. And what does that mean? It's not going to follow a roadmap. It has to be a pioneer. Hey, and some of the stuff yes. we're going to do is going to be so bizarre and so like, wow, what the hell is that? But that whoever is going to survive, I know the score. You know the score. You did Denver Stiffs for a long time. It's not viable anymore to say we're going to write articles and hope advertisers pay us. You got to come up with creative ways to do this.
Look at Denver Stiffs itself. You know, Denver Stiffs should have never existed. What I mean by that is the Denver Post should have had an online digital section of extra content that they couldn't fit into their newsprint. I remember I used to run into my good friend Benjamin Hockman, who used to cover the Nuggets. And I was like, how come you don't write that much?
Yeah.
He said, well, those are the print limits. Like, what is this, 1812?
Yeah, I know.
The print limits? Yeah. I mean, what are you talking about? You know, and Denver Stiffs, and I think you, I mean, I don't think, I know you elevated it to an even higher place. I believe has more page views than the Denver Post Nuggets section.
Oh, there's no doubt.
By multifold.
Yeah.
So I thought Denver Stiffs was a disruptor in a positive direction, and I think what you're doing with DNVR and our friends over there is also a positive disruptor. I am an entrepreneur. I love disruption.
Yeah. Same with me.
And by the way, I've been a victim of disruption on the wrong side.
Right.
I was a nationally syndicated cartoonist.
Yeah.
You know, I had 300 print newspapers across the country stroking me a check every month for my comic strip. And I started losing papers left and right, and I couldn't see the future and innovate and get my comic strip in a form online that captured enough readers to justify its existence. And I was playing for the newspapers, but I won't make that mistake twice.
Well, I hope Altitude figures something out, or somebody else comes in and figures something out to get this to the consumers in Denver the way they want, because the Avs and Nuggets are just so interesting right now, and it is maddening to somebody that puts so much like emotion and love and passion and tries to share that passion with people to say, oh yeah, here locally we just don't have an outlet, a legal outlet for doing that.
There's a subtle problem too that no one's talking about. The reason you're a Nuggets fan and the reason I'm a Nuggets fan is because we can watch them on TV growing
up. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And if tomorrow's fans cannot access your product freely, cheaply, and easily, you're going to lose them.
Yeah.
And you got to build that base now. I mean, let's be frank. The reason, I mean, I'm a Nuggets fan for lots of reasons. First and foremost is probably because my parents had season tickets. Yeah. We just weren't a Broncos house.
Right.
And so I used to go on my mom or my dad's lap and watch the games from the stands as a young kid. But let's be honest. The reason I'm a Nuggets fan is they were good.
Yeah.
So when I was maybe, let's say, 6 to 10 years old, which I would think is the formative years for a sports fan to really evolve, is when you're 6 to 10 years old. You don't really remember much before you're 6.
Mm-hmm.
So 6 to 10 is your formative years. I had a diet of Alex English. I had Fat Lever. I had Kiki Vandeweghe. I had Doug Moe. And guess what? I'm a Nuggets fan for life because I was watching a team that maybe they didn't win championships. But they won on the court during the regular season. They competed for the playoffs. They were fun to watch. They scored in the 120s frequently. And that's the world. I mean, you're in my office right now. I still have Denver Nuggets. I have ABA placards on my walls. I mean, I grew up with that era of Nuggets fandom, and you're cheating tomorrow's fan by doing this.
And there's a real...
And by the way, sorry to cut you off, but even if you're losing money, get the product to the young kids.
Of course.
Because that's...
They're in the pipeline.
They're going to buy your t-shirts and your jerseys and your tickets and your overpriced inedible food in the arena tomorrow.
Anybody's hobby becomes a part of who they are. Mm-hmm. But I think with sports, it's even more so because, you know, when... For the real diehards, when your team loses, it feels like you lost. Like
right.
And that's how hard it connects. And when you win, it feels like you won. And sports connect. So, yeah, get them in. Get the people in the door and get them feeling that, and you're going to have them along the whole ride. Do you want to talk, before we get out of here, Giants of Africa? Is there anything you want to share about some of the things that you've been involved with over the last couple of years that seems to be picking up an enormous amount of steam?
Well, yeah. So just for your listeners' edification, I know you and I talk about this privately, but I've been very fortunate. You know, even though Masai Ujiri is no longer here, he's in Toronto, we've maintained a great friendship. And I've been very fortunate to serve on the board of Giants of Africa and travel with them to Africa. So last summer, 2019, we did five new countries that we had never done.
Which one?
Six new countries. We did Mali. We did Cameroon, Morocco, South Sudan, Tanzania, and Somalia.
Mm. Oh, and Somalia.
We did a girls' camp. Now, I did not go on that part for maybe obvious security reasons,
sure.
But I think Masai deserves a lot of credit. He takes our troop to places that everyone says you're crazy to go to, you know, like South Sudan, like
South
Mali. Mali's had some challenges.
Yeah.
So our goal is to someday, and we got work to do, but our goal is to someday do a camp in every country on that continent, which is about 53 countries, build courts in every country on that continent, and we're just growing and growing and growing. I mean, we've literally had thousands of campers through our doors now. And as of 3 years ago, we do boys and girls, 50-50. And we're not just doing basketball camps. We're doing a lot more youth empowerment stuff. So we have, just like DNVR has, we have a big announcement coming soon. But I can't say what it is yet. I got to wait till the end of February. But let's do a show together, please.
When it does.
I'm going back to Africa in late February because of this announcement. And let's get together in mid-March.
Where will you be?
I can't tell you.
Announcement. Let's do it.
But let's get together in mid-March, and I want to tell you all about what we're doing this summer, because we're doing something this summer that we've never done before.
I've been to Africa. I've been lucky enough to spend about 4 months total there, a lot less than you have. But I absolutely love every place that I've been there, and I really believe in the power of sports, especially the power of basketball. So I'm so in tune. We've talked about this a lot, obviously not on the show, but I'm just so bought into the vision of people like Amadou Fall, who runs NBA Africa, and then Masai Ujiri, and all the people that are working hard to bring the game there. And not just bring it there for basketball purposes, but to bring it there for economic development and for a beacon of growing the game, the infrastructure, and everything else. So I think it's the coolest thing.
Well, the NBA, you know, Africa as a continent is just now tapping into the business side of sports, which you alluded to, and it's a big deal. So and remember, basketball. I love basketball for a very simple reason that we talk about. I don't think it's talked about enough. It's the only sport you can play by yourself.
I
used to shoot hoops in my driveway, and I would play.
I would play
a 48-minute NBA game. And I used to pretend I was a starting two guard.
Yeah.
And my point, because the Nuggets never had a good starting two guard. So I always pretended that I was playing next to Fat Lever, and I was passing to Alex English, and I was passing to Danny Shays, and I was passing to Bill Hanslick. And I would play a 48-minute game on my driveway by myself. And it's the only sport you can play by yourself.
Yeah. I think that's great. Yeah. Andy, thanks as always. This is always a great conversation. You're right. We did go over our time limit. It's no surprise.
Hey, but we're disruptors. It's new media. We don't have half-hour time slots.
That's right.
Funny Duddies on Comcast.
That's right.
So we'll do this again in March.
All right. To everybody else, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back again next time with brand new episodes. We'll see you, everybody.